People are catching on to the five love languages.
We've been talking with Dr. Gary Chapman, the author of the mega successful book, The Five Love Languages.
The need to feel loved by the significant people in your life is the deepest emotional need we have.
My boyfriend and I read it together, and we quickly realized, like, we are the exact opposite on the love language scale because we took the quizzes.
I'm on with the Gary Chapman. I mean, love languages, and I'm right here in the middle of it. I don't believe this.
Words of affirmation!
Today on Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman.
He's been in a relationship for a year and a half with another woman.
I don't see many books on wives respect your husband.
I see now what I'm about to lose as far as my marriage and my family.
Welcome to Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages. It's time for our Dear Gary broadcast for the month of April.
Today, new calls, questions, relationship struggles, parents, spouses, and more, all straight ahead, as well as rock-solid biblical encouragement from host, author, pastor, counselor, Dr. Gary Chapman. You doing all right, Gary?
I am doing great, Chris, in spite of all the stuff that's happening in the country. Fortunately, I'm feeling good, and my wife is healthy, so, yep, we're blessed.
I'm glad to hear it. And maybe as you listen here today, if you hear an answer to a question we're going to pose to Dr. Chapman or somebody calls in and you say, oh, I know somebody who needs to hear that answer right there, go to our website. You can hear the stream there. You can download the podcast absolutely free. You'll also see our featured resource today, which we discussed last week with author Candy McVicker. The book is titled Holding On to Love After You've Lost a Baby, The Five Love Languages for Grieving Parents. Just go to fivelovelanguages.com. And as we heard last week, Gary, I know you believe this is a really important resource.
Well, I do, Chris, because there's so many people that have lost a baby, either stillbirth or, you know, a miscarriage or a young child, lived for, what, 2 or 3 years or so. And so many times people just kind of, after the initial shock of all that, the people around the couple that lost the baby will kind of get back to normal, and they don't even talk about it. They don't bring it up anymore with the person. And so a lot of that grief is just kind of silent grief that the parents of the child bear themselves. So, yeah, this book is going to help a lot of people. I am super encouraged about it.
Yeah, and I think it's that carrying the pain alone. You see this with people who maybe even today will call in about the struggle in their marriage. They have this all alone, and when they have somebody like you to just come walk alongside who's been there before, it's helpful. And that's the way Candy has written this. She's been there, she and her husband Stephen, right?
Yeah, they've been there, lost 2 children. And she's out of that. She's grown a ministry to help other people process this in a healthy way and to provide resources for hospitals and others and how they can help the grieving parent. So, I really appreciate the opportunity to write this with Candy because, you know, when someone's been through it, you feel the emotion. And I can almost guarantee you the folks who read this book, there will be tears. But tears is a good way. It's a part of grief, you know. Mm-hmm. So I read this book again after it came out, you know, in the final form, and I just thought, man, if I had this book through the years, the couples that have sat in my office have lost a baby, I'd like to put this book in the hand of every person that's gone through that experience. So I'm thinking it's going to help some people.
Holding On to Love After You've Lost a Baby. And if you didn't hear that broadcast last week, go to the website, fivelovelanguages.com, and you can hear it right there or suggest it to somebody else. Again, fivelovelanguages.com. All right, let's get to the questions, Gary. And our first one is actually from a program. You know Dr. Mark Job. He hosts Bold Steps. He's president of Moody Bible Institute. And this question came to that ministry, but I want to hear what you have to say. You ready for this?
Okay.
All right, here it is. It's hard to parent when you have a lot of anger and guilt. I have 2 daughters with 2 different men. Neither are father figures in their lives. My question is about my 16-year-old daughter. She's addicted to her cell phone and any boy who gives her attention. She is talking with a boy she met on a social media app, and I've caught explicit texts between them. Do I have a right to take the phone away, check her phone, and force her to go to church? I felt guilty because of the way her dad treated her. If I try to have a discussion, she breaks down, blames me, and boom, the guilt comes back, and I let her have her phone because I feel I caused all this. What are my options? Everything I hear is on Christian parents who raise their children with godly values. I haven't heard anyone talk about the sinful parent who tries to redeem their life and now struggles with parenting.
Well, first of all, Chris, I have a lot of empathy for the person who submitted this question, because there are literally thousands of parents who have similar feelings. They're looking back on a lifestyle that they lived and now looking at their children who have been influenced by that lifestyle and who are, you know, at odds with their parents on many issues, not just cell phones, but many issues. And there's no easy answer to this, but I do think the starting point, and this is my perspective, and I think it's a biblical perspective, the starting point whenever there's a fractured relationship and you want to do something about it is to ask God to show you where you failed in this person's life. It's a biblical prayer. David prayed that prayer. He said, Lord, shine your light on me and see if there's any wicked way in me. Now, this person's already feeling guilt. They already know that they made some poor decisions. But just inviting God into it, Lord, show me where I fail. And I suggest writing them down just one by one as God brings them to your mind. And then again, confess them to God. Perhaps you've already done that, but confess them to God again. Lord, I fail. I made some serious mistakes here. And I'm thanking you that Christ paid for these, and I'm asking you for forgiveness. Let's get the lines clear between you and God, because God will always forgive. Then I think the second step is you actually go to that child, that teenager or that young adult child, and you apologize to them. I mean, you pour your heart out to them. You tell them, you know, what you've been thinking about and how you've asked God to show you where you failed. And you know that your failures have impacted them. And you regret that, and you're asking them if they can find it in their heart to forgive you. To me, that's the starting point with the other person, is not telling them something, not taking the phone away. It's verbally dealing with those failures in a God-honoring way. And maybe they forgive you. Maybe they say, I'll never forgive you. You know, you don't know how they will respond, because we cannot control someone else's response. And we can't make a child forgive us. Forgiveness is a choice. But at least that child's going to walk away seeing the tears in your eyes and the tears in your voice as you share with them your honest regret over your failures. Having done that, whether they forgive you or whether they don't, I think a week later or a few days later, you want to say to them, you know, honey, what I shared with you last week, and I really want to be a good mother to you for the rest of our relationship. I know in a few years you're going to go to college or you're going to get a job and so forth, but I want our relationship to be good. I want to be a good mother to you. Can you help me? Can we talk about what I need to do to be a good mother to you? Let her sense that you want her input, because teenagers want to be heard. Now, you can't do everything she asks, perhaps. She may say, you know, just don't ever say anything to me about my phone. Let me do this. Let me do that. Let me do the other thing. And we can't always do what they request, but we do want to hear them and know what it is that they think would make you a better mother, and then ask God to show you how you might implement some of those things. Is there a place to take a phone away? Yes, there is a place to take a phone away, but it's after you have made efforts to mend the relationship. If you just take it away when the relationship is still fractured, it just pushes her away further because she senses you don't really care. To me, that's the approach you make, and it's a period of time in which hopefully you can build a better relationship with that daughter. Or for others, it might be an adult child who's already out of the home. But none of us want to live the rest of our lives with a fractured relationship with our children. But we do want to do, as long as they live in our house, we want to do everything we can to help them make wise decisions. Again, we can't control them 24 hours a day, but we want to help them make wise decisions because we don't want them to experience the trauma and the pain that we've experienced in our life by making poor decisions.
You know, it strikes me there's probably somebody listening who said, I did all of the things that she's talking about, raising children with godly values, and my child still, you know, made some bad decisions, still had the problem with the phone or whatever it is. So following God's directives with your children doesn't mean that, you know, you can look at this and say, if I do this, I know that they're going to do that. It's not a guaranteed result, right?
Well, you're absolutely right, Chris. Look at God. His first two children made poor decisions, Adam and Eve. And they had a perfect father and a perfect relationship. Humans are free. God made us free. He did not want us to be robots. And with that freedom comes the possibility that we might make poor decisions. But God valued freedom enough to give it to us. And so you can be a godly parent. You can raise a child in a godly home and do everything you know to do in the best possible way you know to do it. And your children can still make poor decisions. I'd say to the person who submitted this question, don't live under the guilt of past failures. That's exactly what Satan would like for us to do. But when we confess our sins to God, we are forgiven of those things. And now we have the Spirit of God inside of us that can help us and guide us into what we can do now to be the best parent we can be at this juncture in our relationship.
Our featured resource is Holding On to Love After You've Lost a Baby, the 5 love languages for grieving parents. You can find out more about that at 5lovelanguages.com. All right, we love hearing your ideas as well as your questions. And here's a practical thought about physical touch and a long-distance love language.
Hi, Gary. I just wanted to propose an idea for love languages with people facing loved ones overseas in the military or otherwise who have a physical touch love language, sending GIFs online of couples holding hands or hugging or stroking hair, kissing. Those are really helpful to meet that love language. So I just wanted to share. Thank you.
Well, I like that idea, Chris. Good thought. Yeah, I deal with some of these ideas in the book I wrote for the military. It's called The 5 Love Languages Military Edition. And we talk to a lot of military couples to get ideas on how to speak these languages when you are deployed. And of course, these ideas would apply in any relationship where there's geographical separation. And what I hear this person saying is, you send to them photos of holding hands and kissing and those kind of things, and say, if I were with you, this is what I would be doing with you. And they'll get it. Emotionally, they'll get it. I tell you 2 other ideas on physical touch that we have in that book that were shared with us by military couples. One wife said, I knew his love language is physical touch. So while he was deployed, I put my hand on a sheet of paper. I traced my hand and mailed it to him with a note that said, put your hand on my hand. I want to hold your hand. When he came home, he said, Gary, every time I put my hand on that paper, I felt her. So it's not physical touch literally, but it's physical touch emotionally. And that's what we're talking about. So this was a great idea. Appreciate the caller sharing this.
Well, that is in marriage. I guess you could have a long distance relationship as you're dating as well. What about communication, though? This is one of the main things that you talk about, Gary, the struggle in communication, and that's where we go next.
Hi, Gary. My question is, what do you do as a married couple, been married for 10 years, and your husband stops talking to you completely? What do you do? No communication, verbally, non-verbally. So what do you do? Thank you.
Well, obviously, a relationship will not go forward if one party is choosing not to talk at all. Now, I don't know if she means he never says a word. Maybe he does ask, where do you want to go for dinner tonight? Or maybe he says, what do you think we should do? Do you want to pick up Johnny at school? Or do you want me to pick up Johnny at school? You see, many people talk logistics, but they don't talk, you know, real relationship talk. And so I don't know which of these is the case here, but there's a reason why a husband or a wife, for that matter, chooses not to talk. And I don't know what it is in this particular situation, but I can tell you some common things. Part of it is personality, of course. That is, there are people that by nature, they're not talkers. Now, it appears that this husband has been talking earlier in the relationship, but now he's stopped talking, so it may not be a personality matter. But there are those who have a personality. I call them Dead Seas. You know, the Dead Sea in the land of Israel receives the Jordan River, but it doesn't go anywhere. And so we can receive these thoughts and these feelings, and we have this reservoir where we store them, and we're perfectly happy not to talk. That could well be a part of this. But my guess is there's something that's happened in the relationship that's caused this husband to stop talking. It may be that when he shared his ideas, the wife would shoot them down. I don't mean consciously she's doing that, but that's the message he hears, that she's against whatever he shares, and therefore he has decided not to share with her. On the other hand, it could be that something's going on in his life that she doesn't know about. Maybe he's involved with someone else outside the marriage relationship. And whatever reason caused him to draw away from his wife, he doesn't want to re-engage with that because he's finding some emotional satisfaction outside the marriage. So I don't know what's going on, but typically there's something going on that the spouse is not aware of, and that accounts for this behavior. So trying to find out what that is a starting place. The worst thing you can do is condemn him for not talking. That is, give him lectures about, we can't have a relationship if you don't talk to me, and whatever else you say to him. That's the worst thing you can do, because that simply puts the wall up higher and he closes you off even more. But if you come with an attitude of humility and say to him something like, you know, honey, I don't know what's going on inside of you. I'm assuming maybe you're deeply hurt, but I don't know that. I know I've been on your case. I know I've said some harsh things to you about not talking to me, and I'm sorry for that. You don't need to be condemned by me. I need to try to understand you and what might be going on inside of you. I want to be a wife that will help meet your needs, and so I just want to ask you to forgive me for the things I've said negatively to you about not talking to me. Start there. And then don't expect a conversation right away. But the very fact that you acknowledge that the kind of comments you've made to him have been condemning, and that you don't want to be that kind of wife, it's a starting place. Now, this doesn't mean that it's all your fault. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you take the initiative to recognize that your response to his not talking has not been a positive approach. And you recognize that, and you're sorry for that. Always apologizing for what you see in your life opens the door to the possibility that the other person may forgive you and may begin to open up again.
Is there anything in the 10-year mark with their relationship? She doesn't mention children here, but I've heard 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, things can go on over that period of time.
Well, Chris, there is some research that shows there are certain points in a marriage where it's more likely that something will happen in the relationship. But none of those things are causative. They're just observations that this does happen. You can be married 2 years and be in a terrible marriage. You can be married 10 years and be in a marriage that's deteriorating. The important thing is always to assess, what is my part in this? Where might I be failing in this? And maybe your part's only 5%. Maybe the other person's 95% wrong. But if you start with your small percent and you acknowledge it before God and before the other person, you've torn that 5% of the wall down between you, even if they don't forgive you, because you've acknowledged it. And we can't confess the other person's sins, and we can't make them confess their sins, but we can model for them what it means to apologize and accept responsibility for our part in the relationship.
Well, if you heard what Gary just said just a minute ago and you say, that's exactly what I want to say to my spouse, but you didn't write it down, just go to 5lovelanguages.com. You can hear the broadcast again. Fast forward to right there, write it down, and then say that to your spouse and see what happens. Just go to 5lovelanguages.com. Let's flip it around. Let's hear from a husband who now sees what he is about to lose.
Hi, Gary. Right now, my marriage is suffering. My wife has since said that she's filed for divorce. Right now, I'm just suffering inside. I don't really know what to do because I see now what I'm about to lose as far as my marriage and my family. And I'm hoping that there's some way that I can rekindle the flame and let her know that, you know, I can be the man that she fell in love with 25 years ago. But right now, I just feel like my life's in dire straits because this is a woman of my dreams. I have loved her my entire life. I just feel like I made some mistakes where I just start slipping and I just maybe took her for granted. And taking her for granted has put me in this current situation. And this current situation is not what I envision. I don't want this for my life, and I don't want this for my family. Thank you.
Well, I think anyone who hears that caller can identify with the pain. You know, when you've been married 25 years and you assume we're going to be married till the end of the journey, and then your spouse says, I'm tired of this and I'm out of here, it can be a shock and it can bring tremendous pain. And he mentioned the fact that, I think he used the word neglect, I'm not sure, but that was a concept. He realized, he's looking back on it, that he's neglected her and neglected to meet her needs and communicate his love to her in a meaningful way. And this often happens. We get so busy in our work and caring for children and other things, even working at church, that we can neglect each other, fail to speak each other's love language. And our spouse can live for 5 years feeling they don't really love me. You know, we're just roommates living in the same house. And eventually, someone else comes along and they begin to be attracted to someone else. And often that's when they say to the spouse, you know, I don't love you anymore and I'm out of here. Sometimes they leave because they're being abused or something like that, but I don't think that's the case of this caller. But oftentimes they don't leave and don't file for divorce until they're already involved with somebody else. I hope that's not true in your case, but often that is the case. And to try to turn it around at that point can be very, very difficult. Because in their mind, they're saying, I've been with you 25 years. I'm not going to spend the next 25 years like this. So, you know, emotionally, that's where they are. Now, what can you do? Yes, you can apologize, but in their mind, they may well be saying, and may even say out loud, it's too late. It's too late. You've had this chance for a long time, and it's too late now. So we can't make a person who is filing for divorce turn around and come back and give us another chance. What we can do is acknowledge our failures, spell them out. Don't just say, you know, I know I failed you in a lot of ways. No, spell them out. Ask God to show you what they are. And then share them with them and say, you know, I don't know if you can forgive me or not, but I recognize this and I would like to be forgiven. Obviously, I'd like another chance, but I don't know if you can find your heart to give it to me. And then you kind of step back and let them think about it. And maybe they turn and maybe they don't turn. But at least you have had an opportunity to share your heart with them and share your pain with them. Don't try to manipulate them. You know, don't try to preach to them. Don't try to force them to give you another chance because that simply pushes them away. But trust God to work in their heart. If you first let Him work in your heart to show you what you need to be doing, to at least open the door to the possibility that they will turn around. Hmm.
So this goes back to the other call that we had with, you don't control things here. You just do what you can with what you can change in yourself.
You know, we've said this for years. You cannot change your spouse. You cannot make your spouse change. That's true. But we can influence our spouse. And we do. Every day, we either influence them in a positive way or a negative way. And the way you respond in a crisis situation, again, your influence will either be negative or it'll be positive. You'll push them further away or you'll open the door to the possibility things can be better. So what you're asking God for is show me what I can do that might have a positive influence on them. And love is the most powerful influence in the world. If you know their love language, and you realize you have not been speaking it consistently, you begin to speak their love language, and yes, they may brush it off, and they may say it's too late, But you continue speaking their love language as often as you have an opportunity, you're doing the most powerful thing you can do to influence them in a positive way. Again, it doesn't mean they will turn around, but it does mean you're doing the most powerful thing you can do to influence them in a good way.
I mentioned that we love hearing your ideas. Here's an interesting question about the concept of respect and how it relates to the love languages.
Hi, Gary. I am interested in finding out why or the reasons for how we focus so much on love, and I don't see many books on wives respect your husband. So I'm just wondering if you've ever considered looking at the five respect languages or respect styles. I think it's very important that it's both. And God calls us to husbands love your wives and wives respect your husbands. Bye-bye.
Well, that's a very interesting call. Actually, a book has already been written about love and respect. In fact, that's the name of the book, Love and Respect by Emerson Eggerichs. You may want to check that out. I don't know that he has five languages of respect, but he does talk about wives respecting their husbands. You know, there's a sense in my own thinking in which those two things are really meeting the same need. Love is looking out for the other person's interest. Love is expressed in five different ways, to be sure, but all of them, we're trying to say to the other person, I value you, I love you, I care about you, I want to enrich your life. And respect is addressing the same need. It's that need to feel like I'm valued as a person. That person does respect me. So there's a sense in my mind in which those two words are addressing the same basic emotional need, the need to be cared for, the need to be valued. So those are kind of my perspectives on that, but I think you might find the other book very helpful.
Love and Respect by Dr. Emerson Eggerichs. And not the easiest name to say, but it's a good one. Here's a question about infidelity. Now, talk about, you know, respect and love. How do you recover when the unthinkable happens in your marriage? Here's our next caller.
Hi, Gary. My husband and I have been married for 2 years, and he's been in a relationship for a year and a half with another woman. I found out about it, and that was the beginning of everything that was revealed within the 2 years of our marriage and prior to that. I guess my question is, how do I move forward, because I'm really pursuing divorce, how do I move forward in wanting to be in another relationship or get to that point? Want to hear your thoughts. Thank you.
Well, let me say, first of all, that when there is sexual infidelity in a relationship, it is the deepest emotional pain that one person can inflict on another. When we marry, we commit ourselves to each other for a lifetime and to be faithful to each other. When we break that covenant, it's like a dagger in the heart of the person who was sinned against. And so it's not easy to just get up and go on. First thing I would say to this person is, the worst thing you could do is to get involved with someone else yourself at this juncture. I know we're hurt. I know we're lonely. And often we do run into someone who shows us affection, and we're kind of drawn to that other person, and we think, okay, well, maybe I'm going to find the right person this time. Most common mistake I think people make is to get involved in another relationship far too soon after they've gone through a deep hurt like this caller describes. I would say use the next 2 years as a time for personal growth. Your relationship with God, seeking to enhance that relationship. If you're not in a church, get involved in a church, but not just attending a church. Get involved in some of the small groups in that church, or a small group in that church, where you can build friendships and relationships and study the Word together and develop your relationship with God during this time. Because what you want is God's direction in your life. Nothing more important than that. So you seek to walk closer with God during this time. And in due time, once there's been some healing, because you're going through grief right now, and grief is a dark journey, and it takes time. In fact, we're told, research is pretty clear on this, it takes at least 2 years after divorce for us to get back on level ground emotionally so that we're likely to make a wise decision for the future. So I would just say, in your own mind, just say, I'm not going to get involved with anyone else. For the next 2 years, I'm going to try to find healing from my hurt and my grief and my pain, and I'm going to try to grow in my relationship with God. I'm going to try to enhance my relationships with my children, if you have children. If not, with my brothers and sisters, my mother, my father, friends, I'm going to try to be involved in things at church and serving others. This can be a great 2 years for you as you're going through the process of healing. You can also be using your life in a positive way, and then you trust God with the future.
There are some in this situation who will say, you know, why did you do that? Why'd you betray me like this and just be so angry at the spouse? Others will say to themselves, oh, I'm so bad. I made such a bad decision. And they beat themselves up. For the person who does that, who goes that route and says, I should have seen this before, and feels like it's all my fault, or at least, you know, a lot my fault. What do you say to that person?
Well, I think, Chris, that person is typically one who has already low self-esteem, probably grew up in a home where they were often told what they did wrong and never what they did right. And so consequently, when something goes wrong in a relationship, by nature, they just blame themselves. And I think if we understand this pattern and then understand the scriptures, we can come back to say, well, yes, I'm not perfect, but I didn't cause them to do that. You know, just like God was perfect, and He didn't cause Adam and Eve to sin. They made right. that choice on their own. And so you didn't cause your husband to have an affair for a year and a half, and you've only been married 2 years. I mean, you could not have caused that in the 6 months that you before that took place. Something going on in him in terms of his own life that explains a lot of that. I just think we bring it to God and say, Lord, you know, I am not perfect. I'm not claiming I'm perfect, and I did fail in some ways, and acknowledge those to God if you see failures. But don't let yourself live under the burden that I caused them to do this, because that is not true. People make their own decisions. And certainly if they've made a commitment in marriage, they should not be getting involved with somebody else 6 months down the road.
Yeah. This is Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman. Our website's 5lovelanguages.com. Again, 5lovelanguages.com. I don't know that we've ever gotten this question, Gary. When couples who are older get married, it can lead to some difficult family situations, and that's what our next caller wants to avoid.
Hi, Gary. I've been divorced for 30-some years and over 65. I've met a nice lady. We're both Christians, and we've been together for probably almost 2 years now. I was wondering, is there, both of us have all of our wills and trust and stuff all in order for our children, and we don't really want to go through a marriage. Is there a way that you can, you know, have somebody who is legal to do so, you know, say your vows and basically what I'm trying to do is eliminate a legal document. So if, you know, something happens, which I hope never will, create a bunch of trouble between the families. I thought about asking the pastor at our church, but I don't have the courage, I guess you could say, to ask him something like that. Thank you. Bye.
What I hear this caller asking is, could we have a private commitment to each other that's not legal and commit ourselves to each other as married partners, but it not be a legal marriage? Can that be done? I don't think I've ever been asked that question before. Obviously,
I thought, yeah.
Lots of people who are living together without being married, no question about that in our culture. But I hear him wanting to do the right thing, and yet he doesn't want to jeopardize the financial arrangements that he has with his children and the one that she has with her children in terms of the wills that they have made. To me, if you're going to get married, if you want to get married and feel that God wants you to be married, then let's make it legal. Mm-hmm. But let's just agree beforehand that his will leave all the assets to his children, her will leave all her assets to her children, and the two of them pool their funds that are coming in on a regular basis now as they enough to live on, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. No reason why that agreement could not be made as a part of the marriage ceremony. Rather than doing kind of a semi-marriage, I would say, let's go ahead and make it legal, but let's just take the legal steps that, and I understand, and I think most couples your age would understand, you don't want financially the marriage to cause your children on both sides to be upset because you changed your wills, but you wouldn't have to do that in order to be married. So those are my thoughts. I don't know what your pastor would say, but you might get up enough courage to ask him. He may have an idea also.
Well, I love it that he trusted you enough to call Gary. And yeah. my question is, I wonder if there is a lawyer, a legal expert who deals with these types of things that you could just go to for a half an hour and say, here's what we want to do. Is this something yeah. that can be done legally so that we can go ahead and get married and like you say, pool the resources?
And also, if you make that decision, it should be communicated to your adult children before you get married and just say, you know, we feel like God is leading us to marriage, but we want you to know that our wills are going to be the same. I'm going to leave all of my assets to my children. She's going to leave all of her assets to her children so that they don't, you know, they don't freak out, as it were.
Yeah. All right, Gary, here's a call that we couldn't air because of a phone line issue, but I want to get your take on this. I've transcribed it. The caller says, I'm an only child. I'm a nurse. And my question is about my adult children. I have two who no longer speak to me. They're angry at me. I've heard your perspective on apology and when sorry isn't enough, but how do you have a relationship with your adult children while setting healthy boundaries so you receive the respect as a parent you deserve? There's that word again, respect. This has caused a lot of heartache. I want to learn how to mend these relationships.
You know, Chris, fractured relationships with an adult child are more common than we would think. I can't tell you how many people have been in my office over the last 5 or 6 years who have a fractured relationship with their adult children. Sometimes it's very difficult to bridge that gap and find reconciliation. But I do think for this mother and this specific question, I would again go back to the reality that if you do sense that you have failed your children in some way along the line, and God can help you reveal that if you're not aware of it, just ask Him. And I think then acknowledging those failures to your adult children, verbalizing, and she said that she'd read the book When Sorry Isn't Enough, which talks about how to apologize and how to apologize in a way that the other person can sense your sincerity, because that's what they're looking for. And so I think a sincere apology is the first step in seeking reconciliation. Now, they may or may not choose to forgive you, or they may say it's too late for you to be apologizing. I don't know how they'll respond, but you're not responsible for the way they respond. But we are responsible for dealing with our own failures. So you do that and ask them that you hope they can find it in their heart to forgive you. And then, having done that, keep the door open. Send them birthday cards. If they're married, send them anniversary cards. Give them Christmas gifts, whether they come to your place or don't come to your place. And then if you know their love language, reach out in their love language periodically and express your love for them in their love language. Again, they may or may not reciprocate, but you're at least doing the most powerful things you can do when you have dealt with your own failure and you're choosing to love them in spite of the fact that they are not loving and respecting you at this juncture. Love tends to stimulate love. And when they can see a real change in the way you're responding to them, that is, rather than condemning them for not having a relationship with you and telling them how much it hurts you, rather than taking that approach, you just simply reach out in love to them. And over a period of time, it may well be that they will begin to warm up to you because they see you responding to them in a different way from the way you perhaps responded to them in the past.
Great answer. And I could plumb the depths of that a little bit more and ask more questions. But I want to get to our final call today, because this caller says that many couples are dealing with the topic that she is about to describe. I want to hear what you have to say about that, Gary. Here we go.
Hi, Gary. I came across your book, Loving Your Spouse When You Feel Like Walking Away. I agree with your biblical perspective on marriage and the hope of navigating any difficulty for a greater marriage and purpose. Here's my question. How do you biblically handle a spouse with mental illness who has determined you are their enemy and will not acknowledge their illness and seek help? Many couples are suffering with this problem, and I do not see much real help on this topic. Thank you.
Well, no question about it. When you're dealing with a person who has a mental illness of one sort or another, it is very, very difficult to have a meaningful, healthy relationship with such a person. I think what you can do is to try to get them the best help you can get them. When you say mental illness, there's a whole lot of variation in terms of what mental illness is, various types of mental illness. Some of them can be helped with medication. Some can be helped with counseling. Typically, counseling and medication together often is the key to helping them make progress. So I wouldn't give up on the possibility that they can never be different. I would seek to find out what the local resources are that you may have access to that may offer some help to them. Because when you're dealing with someone with certain types of mental illness, you can't rationally relate to them because they're not rational. But if you can get help, and they can be brought back to a more realistic frame of mind mentally, then the relationship can be better. So I think that's where the energy should be focused, is on trying to get them the best help available with their particular mental illness.
You know, I had a friend who went through this with her husband, both an older couple, and she kept asking that same question: how do I love him well? Because he was on the front side not only of dementia, but also some other things that were going on. And for her, it came to the point where he became violent with her, that she said, the most loving thing that I can do right now is to keep myself safe and have him housed somewhere with people who can take care of him. I can't do this anymore. And that was just crushing to her, because she felt like she wasn't loving him, but she knew that she couldn't keep going the way she was going.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Chris. You know, I wrote the book, Keeping Love Alive as Memories Fade, The Five Love Languages and the Alzheimer's Journey. But any form of dementia, that book would be helpful, because in the early stages, we can emotionally stay connected with that person. Even when they lose cognitive abilities, we can touch them emotionally. They can't respond to us, but we can touch them emotionally. But there does come a place in which a person, basically the best thing you can do is what you just said, and that is find a facility that's designed to work with people with that particular type of mental illness. And then you keep in touch, you know, visit as you can, but it's beyond your ability to keep them at home for 24 hours a day. And there are, of course, social workers and others who can help you make the decision of when that time actually comes.
Well, before we conclude today, I want to give you our phone number. If you have a question for Dr. Chapman, or maybe you want to respond to something you heard today, 1-866-424-GARY is our number. If you have a question or comment, 866-424-GARY. We would love to hear from you. And don't forget to check out our featured resource, Holding On to Love After You've Lost a Baby, The Five Love Languages for Grieving Parents. I believe it'll help a lot of people. You can find out more at fivelovelanguages.com.
And next week, how loving an older person will change your life.
Learn the value of wrinkles in 1 week. A big thank you today to our production team, Steve Wick and Janice Todd. Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman is a production of Moody Radio in association with Moody Publishers, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Thanks for listening.